D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Paul Kaharski of PaulKaharski.com. Paul will also join Robbie in Rex Road for a full hour tomorrow morning. Paul, I saw the feels like temperature in Tampa today. How are you handling the heat?
It really wasn't that bad out there. It was worse last time we were down here for the Vrabel Brady reunion. They've got a giant Bucks flag that hangs over the field. It wasn't flapping too much, but it was moving a little bit, which made it overall bearable.
So, Paul, let's start with what everyone wants to know. You followed around Cam Ward today at practice. How do you evaluate his performance against the Buccaneers today?
Yeah, I think everybody followed around. There weren't too many of us from Tennessee here, but he's pretty solid. They opened poorly, and I put out a video of it might have been 12 or 15 one-on-one snaps. Didn't do a great job showing which quarterback was throwing which ball, but it was all him and Allen. And there were, six overthrows and underthrow and four drops, it was a terrible period. I don't know why so many Titans fans are justifying it in response to it on Twitter. You're supposed to win in that period and win with regularity. And they didn't, but they got better from there. But it seemed like they needed to kind of ease into the practice on offense, and it took them a little while. And then Cam and Tyler Lockett were talking about, they did kind of come into it with an approach that they needed to. I just saw a big thunderbolt out my window. The Bucs aren't a team that's going to offer you much deep, and that they needed to take kind of a steady, short approach. I thought Cam maybe got a little gun-shy after he threw an interception to Hassan Reddick. It's odd for an edge to be picking a tight end, a ball intended for a tight end, really close to the line of scrimmage. But he had a couple shots, a really good throw to Gunnar Helm down the seam under pressure that was, kind of unanimously the best moment of practice. But this was an efficient and calm Cam Ward, and that's what they wanted. If you're looking for a lot of fireworks, not so much.
Other than Ward, Paul, who else stood out to you today, good or bad?
Well, I think a lot of the receivers, the two young receivers, DK and Io Manor, were good and solid. Calvin Ridley had a nice catch going to the ground. Vita Vea did not play much. He was a little bit in 2 minute, and then I saw him on the field, of course. It's always important to get him out there for field goal defense. So I didn't get a great sense of Skoronski and the interior guys against him. So really a lot of watching of the skill position guys. I thought they ran the ball pretty well too, for as best as you can tell about how a team's running the ball when they're not taking a running back to the ground.
Paul Kaharski from Paul Kaharski joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Paul, we saw there was a skirmish between the teams at one point, as well as video of Jarvis Brownlee needing to be restrained from fans who were trash-talking him. What more can you tell us about those situations?
Yeah, I think Simmons was getting under some people's skin. I don't really know what triggered it, but Simmons and Barton were the two guys at the center of it for the Titans. Barton really played it down after the fact. And then there was so the first round wasn't that bad and only involved maybe, those two and their counterparts. And then Simmons' counterparts being Graham Barton and Heck, interior linemen for the Bucks. But then Simmons got shoved, I think maybe from behind there, and that prompted everybody, the Titans sideline, to kind of empty first, and then everybody to come. And there was some additional shoving and the like before things settled down. I was pretty close to Cam Ward. who was on the sideline and far away, probably 20 yards away from everything. And he just took the ball in his hand and flung it pretty casually. And then I asked him about it afterwards, his aerial support to the battle, if you will. And he said it was just aiming for one of those guys in a red uniform.
So was he pretty far from the scrummage, Paul, or was he close enough to get one of Tampa's players?
It was a loopy throw, Mace. If it hit, I think he had a 50-50 chance of hitting red or white, and then barring somebody having taken their helmet off, I don't think it was going to hurt anybody.
Now there was Willie and I noticed during practice last week, and we made notes of it about the batted balls. Him throwing from different arm angles and him trying to figure it out in regards to not getting balls batted down. How did he look when it comes to that today? Were there any balls batted down? Did he have any that, flung off our helmet or two?
Yeah, I don't remember any, and I could have missed, but he went through that patch three or four practices where there were a bunch, and I think it's kind of settled itself down. And he was defensive about it, when we asked him about it. I've thrown sidearm for a long time. Some balls are going to get batted, tipped, some aren't. And, didn't say, at this level I need to be a little bit more conscious of it. They could be more costly or anything like that. And I think that's definitely the case, The older you get and now you're at the top level, skimming a ball off a guy's helmet or getting them batted down more often, they're more likely to turn into deadly plays for you. But he really went through a patch there. I think he had like 7 in 4 days or something like that. Don't hold me to the numbers. And since then, I don't remember one. So maybe it's something we're going to see in patches. Or maybe it's something he has made a conscious effort of avoiding, or maybe the defenders just haven't been in those spots, but it hasn't been a thing. It wasn't a thing today.
Now you talked about the interior, Vita Vea not practicing much. So we don't know how much, they were getting work, but not work that they would have gotten had Vita Vea been out there. But the two edge guys, Moore and Latham, how did they do? Because the last day here, I thought the offensive line did a great job, especially in the 2-minute. We hadn't talked about them much, which is a good thing. But how did that translate into what they were doing today? Did those two guys hold up?
Well, we're talking about getting it out quick, and Lockett and Cam talking about kind of coming in with that plan. I don't think the Bucs' edges really had a chance to be very influential in terms of pass pressure. Because of the way the Titans were operating, being pretty quick, a lot of slants and a lot of checkdowns. I think the ball was out of his hand pretty quickly, so I didn't really feel like Cam was at much risk. But I can't say that the tackles were doing excellent work. I think the timing of the offense was working in their favor, and they were making a conscious effort to get the ball out.
And that's what I was going to ask you about this offense now, because it wasn't like that last year. It seemed like they were trying to take a lot of big shots last year. Maybe that contributed to the sacks. But do you see them now making more so of an effort to get the ball out very quickly?
Well, Lockett in particular made it sound like it was about the Bucs. Mm-hmm. That the Bucs, you got to find spots in the zone against the Bucs that they'll drop and set pretty quickly and be coming at you. So he made it sound very team specific. I think Brian Callahan's smart enough, and this team is talented enough that I would hope in certain regards, Derek, that they're doing things that are going to be team specific and game specific. We go on the other side of the ball and talk about Kevin Winston. Are we going to see big nickel packages? Well, I think against certain teams, you should see big nickel packages based on who they're lining up on the slot. And in other games, I think it'd make more sense to see heavy Roger McCreary. And so I would think that they're going to package up, and, some games we're going to see not that many shots, and other games they'll probably scheme some things up that they think they can create the time for.
Paul Kaharsky is with us, paulkaharsky.com. And Paul, I was reading your recap of the drills, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, the one-on-ones. You felt like there were too many balls that weren't complete when you got a lot of space out there when it's one-on-one. How would you grade Cam Ward's accuracy in general, and how do you project his accuracy going forward?
I think he's pretty accurate. I think, it's all based on the timing. Again, nobody wants to hear a reporter fussing about the glare and the positioning and all of that. I didn't do a great job keeping track of when Cam was throwing and when Allen was throwing today. I didn't do as good a job as I should have on that. But I think there was maybe a little bit of a degree of tightness and tempo problem for him and everybody early, and that maybe was a sign of a young team today. But he puts a lot of balls on the spot, generally speaking. Now, they don't, sometimes a guy like Brownlee or Baker will make a play on them because they're pretty good corners, I think. I think Baker's kind of a guy that's going to emerge as somebody worth taking note of. And McCreary, too, we know about. And I think sometimes he misses. But I don't think accuracy is one of his big things. I do think once in a while, Willie, on the deeper stuff, he's late and short. Which is something that Derek's been out there a lot. I'd be curious if he agreed with that. But, the first ball at the stadium, he had Ridley deep to the right and it turned into a touchdown. He got the ball there, but McCreary got turned around and, I think they would have liked to have seen him hit Ridley, in stride without him stopping. I wrote a piece about them grading throws, you want a throw there where the guy runs onto it and doesn't break stride. And he got a C throw that made him stop and turn and wait for it. Now, it's a touchdown either way, but in a tighter situation, you need an A ball there, not a C ball.
Which one of the rookie wide receivers, and I'm not just talking about today, which one has stood out to you the most? When DK and Iyo Manor?
I think Iyo Manor can do more. He's not as fast, right? But I think the route tree for DK to me seems maybe like it's going to be a little bit more limited early. You get the ball on his hands in the right spots, and he can do a lot. But I think Iyo Manor can probably do more right out of the gate. And I don't know, the Titans have faced a lot of press from their own guys, and I don't know that they faced a lot of press today. But I certainly think off the line of scrimmage, I like Iyo Manor. But also, to a layman's eyes, maybe it's just that the bigger guy seems more capable in the first 5 or 10 yards than the sleeker guy. And I think it's going to be nice to have both of them. But I also think, I'm encouraged by both of them, but I think the odds of getting big production out of 2 fourth-round picks in the same year with a rookie quarterback are probably pretty low. And so I think people are probably have too low expectation out of how much run Bryce Oliver's going to get. And the same for Jefferson. I think those guys are going to get a lot of snaps, especially Jefferson early. And I think the rookies are going to be dealt with patiently. I don't know. I wouldn't jump to get either of those guys in my fantasy league. That's for sure.
Yeah, that it's been a while since a rookie receiver has done that, but especially from the fourth round. But, Paul, I realize we're all getting older. It's hard to remember exactly what we were thinking even a couple months ago as opposed to a few years ago. But A.J. Brown came out and said he had outgrown the situation in retrospect. And we were wondering if that's how he really felt at the time of the trade or that's how he feels in hindsight looking back on it. My question to you is, what was your reaction to the trade when it happened? Because I don't remember it being such a one-sided, because now we could all look back and say, whoa, what a disaster. That trade was awful. But at the time, I could at least see both sides. I was like, wow, that's bold. But how did you feel about it in the moment?
No, I thought it was absolute disaster. I mean, for 25 years, you know, I mean, Mace, you were drafted in what, 97?
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, this team, a receiver was a trouble spot for this franchise forever. And they finally get a guy who is, you know, supremely gifted and a big-time playmaker. And it's far too self-congratulatory to say, well, I did it once, I'll just do it again. You got one. The league's heading that direction where they're more valuable than ever. And I think it's just crazy. You got to sit in a room with them, figure things out, struggle through the difficulties, and find some mutual ground there. You were set. I mean, you had a quarterback who was pretty good with the talent. And if you went forward with Tannehill and whoever you found to replace Tannehill eventually with A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, you had answers on offense. And I think to create a question again at wide receiver after just 3 years was crazy to me.
Were you concerned about the cap at all being an issue?
No.
With having to pay Simmons and already paying your running back a lot more than teams play running backs, and of course it's Byard and Tannehill was expensive. I seem to remember that being a factor as to why they did it.
I believe the cap is absolutely real, but I think that you figure out a way to pay your
right.
top guys.
You're saying they would just deal with it, just get it done.
Figure
yeah.
it out with everybody else.
Right.
You figure it out with everybody else, but you've got to keep your star guys, your star marquee guys. And this team doesn't, you know, had gone through stretches without star power, and they backed down to a guy who was being nasty. Look, at the same time, and these guys haven't panned out the same way, but you had Deebo Samuel, you had
McLaurin.
What's his name up in Seattle? McLaurin and
Metcalf.
Washington and,
yep.
and Metcalf up in Seattle. And all of those deals got worked out. Now, they yep. none of them panned out to the same – McLaurin maybe similar, but none of them panned out. You had the best of the four, and you're the only one that caved.
Okay, so here's the last one. Did you sense leading up to the trade that A.J. Brown wanted to stay, or do you think he had a notion of, you know what, I have outgrown Tennessee. I would like to go somewhere that has a bigger market.
I think A.J. Brown wanted to be paid. I don't think it necessarily mattered where, but once you feel a certain degree of disrespect and somebody else is willing to pay you, well, then you want to be paid where they're willing to pay you. But I think if the Titans paid him, he would have been perfectly happy in Tennessee. Give me the money.
Paul Kaharsky from paulkaharsky.com joining us live from Tampa. He will join Robbie and Rex Road during the 7 o'clock hour tomorrow morning. Paul, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to hearing you tomorrow with Robbie and Joe.
Good to be with you guys. This lightning's getting closer over here, and I'm on the 11th floor.
Welcome to Florida.
stay hopeful.
Every day.
Don't get in the shower.
Been there, done that.
Thank you, Paul.
I wonder if that's real, because the other day it was storming, and I had to take a shower, but I'm like, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait to take a shower.
I think that's an old wives' tale.
Yeah, that may be an old wives' tale, but I didn't want to.
This is a perfect question for
exactly.
our listeners. They know.
You know what the ultimate old wives' tale is? Don't swim until 30 minutes
right.
after you eat.
Man, that is a rule that it causes a revolt
yes.
at the pool, man. You're like, I'm going in. I don't care what you say.
It's been 22 minutes. I don't care. Ah, cramp.
Oh,
that is a wives' tale.
I mean, to
that
be fair,
I can confirm is a wives'
to
tale.
To be fair, there have been times where it's been storming and my son needs a bath, and I'm like, should I give him a bath?
See? Thank you. You're thinking the same way I was thinking. I want to be
know.
Able to hear that it was a just a tale. I want to be around to hear it was a tale.
Okay, you let us know if there's actually any merit to not bathing or showering during a thunderstorm. 615-737-1025. I do want to get back to A.J. Brown for a second, because I want to revisit his comments and whether they speak to a larger issue with the Tennessee Titans organization. So we'll do that next. 615-737-1025. This week's Nashville's best deal is Boom Boss Pizza and Watch Bar. Award-winning gourmet pizzas, handcrafted beverages, and get swept up in the thrill of live sports at Boom Boss Pizza and Watch Bar, your go-to spot for good times. Boom Boss has locations in East Nashville, speaking of my son, Arlo Vingan, big fan of Boombas in East Nashville. There are also locations in Spring Hill and Murfreesboro, so get half off a $30 gift card now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals.
I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but it's a good thing for you. Have you seen the completion of the trade from Tennessee to Philadelphia? Might be the best trade the Eagles have ever made, and because they got you and everything you've done. Does that feel at least good to being like, they took a chance on me, they got me, and I basically overperformed to like an insane level in terms of the return?
Yeah, I'm grateful that happened. And I like to say, like, you know, I grew that situation in Tennessee. You know, I'm glad this happened because I feel like I was meant to shine, and we needed a big team with a big market, you know, and I think this is the right place and the best fit for me. You know, I am a little sad, you know, for Treylon Burks, and I wish he could, you know, get healthy, because he's a good kid, and I talked to him numerous times. I got his number, and it just sucks to see it go down like that.
Yeah.
That was A.J. Brown on Pardon My Take. By the way, Andrew texted earlier, Derek.
Yes.
D-Mace crashing out on the kid thing is the most Larry David thing I've ever seen him do, and I'm here for it.
Somebody feels me. Yes.
Quickly, Randy is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I think he wants to comment on the old wives' tale, showering when it's thundering and lightning out. Randy, go ahead.
Yes, it is. It's surreal. It's not an old wives' tale. It's you can be zapped by it.
Okay. Good to know.
Right.
Thank you, Randy.
This is the shower thing, not the swimming after the eating, right?
Yeah, not the swimming after
the
eating.
Have we concluded that is
I think that may have been.
I mean, Josh texted in and said swimming after waiting 30 minutes is so that you don't poop in the pool.
What?
What?
I
thought it was always about cramps.
Yeah, I can see cramps. Yeah.
Josh, you need to control your bowels, my friend.
Yeah, first of all, what are you eating?
Did anybody really enforce 30 minutes? 30 minutes is
it's also
a
like
15 minutes I could see.
I know that summer is near its end and pools are either starting to close or they have reduced hours. But the other thing, other than the wait 30 minutes to eat old wives' tale, is the shower before entering the pool. Raise your hand if you actually do that. I see no hands.
Oh, shower before entering
shower.
The pool?
It all depends on
never happens.
It all depends on what I've been doing. Like, if I've been running around all day.
The pool is the shower.
No,
there's chlorine
the
in
shower.
There.
No,
there's chlorine
I'm
in there.
I'm getting a shower first, rinsing off, and then I get in the pool.
Okay.
I have done it. I have
Man.
Done it. But I have not always done
it. It's merely a suggestion. It's not a rule. It's merely a suggestion. But so you heard the clip from A.J. Brown on Pardon My Take, how he quote-unquote outgrew that situation in Tennessee. And we did get a texter. I want to make sure I find this texter. Mm-hmm. Gunner on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, said, can we please get over this A.J. Brown junk? It's in the past. Who cares anymore? Let's talk now. Good grief. All right, Charlie Brown. But I'm wondering if A.J. Brown's comments speak to a larger issue with the Tennessee Titans and how they are perceived around the NFL. And I know that the Titans have struggled over the past 2.5 years, which is putting it delicately, but there was, not too long ago, a 6-year stretch when the Titans were one of the best teams in the NFL. Between 2016 and 2021, the Titans won 59 games. Here are the only teams in the NFL over that stretch, 2016 to 2021, who won more games than the Titans. The Chiefs, the Patriots, the Saints, the Packers, the Steelers, and the Ravens. That's it. So I know things haven't been going well recently, but I'm just wondering, and we were talking about this, Derek, and this was the point you were making earlier about the, you know, a bigger market. A.J. Brown said that. He wanted to go to a bigger market. Like, I'm wondering if those comments speak to a bigger issue with the Titans and how they're perceived.
I hope it doesn't, but unfortunately, I think it's partly true. Just look at the way this team has been covered. Even when they had Derrick Henry, and he was doing what he was doing, I don't think this team was covered in such a way that they became, you know, darlings of the NFL or, you know, the NFL world. No, I think they still were, you know, facets of the NFL fan base that probably didn't know much about the Titans and probably still don't know much about the Titans. And this is something I'm sure they have been fighting since 1997. We went on a historic run when you're talking about Nashville sports for a period of time. And the minute we sort of got off that track, they stopped talking about the team. You don't see that from more other organizations. That like Pittsburgh can go 0-17 two years in a row. They're still talking about Pittsburgh. Hell, we know what they do with Dallas. Dallas, every year is Dallas' year to win a Super Bowl, no matter what. And they do it with certain teams and certain markets.
Well, the Cowboys have their own problems.
Yeah,
they have,
exactly. So I think this is a issue. I'm not sure if it's so much more a problem now. I think it's more so an issue. And I think they've been working hard, very hard, to try to change sort of the perception. That's why they went out and got big name free agents to try to bring them in, to try to change sort of, the perception of coming to Nashville, playing for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, I'm sure the Nashville Predators went through it for a minute too.
I was going to bring that up to Willie as we continued this conversation. I vividly remember writing a story. This was when I was back at the Tennessean, and the Predators were traveling through Toronto. And Willie, as you know, when your team visits Toronto, especially if you only visit once a year like the Predators do, there's a lot of attention.
It's a circus.
And I remember writing a story at the time about the Predators not getting a lot of buzz for individual awards. This was before Pekka won the Vezina Trophy. P.K. Subban had just joined the team. He was playing well in his first – I think it might have been his first season with the Predators, so I guess that would have been 2016. But I remember talking to David Poyle about it. And David Poyle, along similar lines, said, hey, when you play in Nashville, it's harder to get attention. I'm just wondering about Brown and – the perception of Nashville. And one thing I looked up, Willie, just because I know that we're going to get texts to this effect, Amy Adams Strunk is a cheap owner. She's not willing to pay. I went to SpotTrack and looked up salary cash, their salary cash tracker, and just looked over the past 5 years, including this season. 2021, Titans ranked 16th in total cash. 16th. 2022, 13th, 2023, 26th, 2024, 25th, 2025, 24th. So I was just curious about the spending. Near the tail end of the Mike Vrabel era, they were middle of the pack in spending. The past few years, they've been near the bottom. But I just wanted to add that for context.
The spending thing is interesting. I have felt like they may not have all of the tools at their disposal to spend like other teams that have maybe more revenue streams. I've gotten that vibe, and that's not just my observation. That's what I hear from national people. So getting back to the question, I think you're asking is it the market or is it the organization? Because it can be one or the other. I think no matter what, Nashville will never be a spotlight television market where your games are going to be more on national TV and you're going to have the spotlight, even if your team's really, really good. It'll obviously be better if you have a good team, but it won't – like the Dallas Cowboys haven't really been that good a lot. I mean, they have some good years, some bad years, but they're always in the spotlight, regardless of whether they're going to be a wild card team, going to be a Super Bowl contender, or going to be an also-ran. Dallas is always going to have a spotlight. Same thing with certain other organizations. The Titans will never be in that category. But I think getting to your – and the Predators would be the same way – but the Predators have gone from being a team that people had on their no-trade lists, Jason Spezza, to a destination city. That was the thing that Barry Trotz was shopping around, right? And that wasn't because of the TV market. That was because of the organization. So I wonder how A.J. Brown felt about that, because different players would have different viewpoints. Sometimes it's more important to be the spotlight. Sometimes it might be much more important, how am I being treated by the organization?
Yeah, it could have been. Paul said as much when he said, listen, if they would have paid him, he'd have probably more than like he would stay. Just pay me the money.
Well, but, he was under contract anyway. So that, if you're gonna give me, it's not like he could have chosen on his
own. He couldn't have, but he would have made he would have made such a fuss headed into camp.
They were definitely worried about that.
They didn't want to have to deal with that. Now, listen, maybe you're not in a position to say, I don't need to deal with that. Well, we know they're not in that position now, but maybe even then you were not in that position to say, well, we can't handle a player like A.J. Brown. But yet and still, I think if you pay him the money, then you decide, or you put the contract on the table, then you decide what is he really saying here? Is he saying I'm going to take the money, or is he saying nope? I know you want to sign this long term deal. I know you're giving me $20 million, but I just want to get out of here. That's the way the comment sort of came off, as if it didn't matter because I was forward thinking, and I knew that this wasn't the place that I needed to be to achieve everything that I wanted to achieve, whether it be money or winning a championship. Do we think they would have, maybe they would have finished out the season a lot better. Maybe John Robinson wouldn't have got fired. I don't know. But I don't think one guy totally demolished, you know, one team. AJ Brown is damn good. But the Titans were heading in that direction anyway, meaning the direction they're in now, not winning many games. I think they were heading in that direction anyway. But it would have, if you would have offered him the contract, I wonder if he would have still stayed. If you would have said, hey, listen, I know Philly's offering you this. We're going to offer you the same amount, maybe a little bit more. Are you staying?
And what we don't know is how that would have played out.
But that wouldn't have came
because
up until the next following season.
Exactly. They could have played it out.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they could have, as we know, a team has the leverage, mm-hmm. just like Jerry Jones knows this right now about Micah Parsons. He can't go anywhere.
Yeah, I can franchise that.
I can franchise
him.
So the Titans could have used that on A.J. Brown, which would have forced him to either sit at home or at squawk or whatever, or just take the deal.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Again, A.J. Brown, in an interview with Part of My Take, said he quote-unquote outgrew that situation at Tennessee, said he was glad the trade happened because, quote, I felt like I was meant to shine. We needed a big team with a big market, and so on and so forth. Do A.J. Brown's comments speak to a larger issue about the perception of the Tennessee Titans as a franchise, the city of Nashville as a sports market? 615-737-1025. Let's give away a pair of tickets, and let's see who has our number on speed dial. Be caller number one, 615-737-1025, and you will win a pair of tickets to see Robert Randolph at Fog Street Lawn Club on August 15th. Caller number one, 615-737-1025, a pair of tickets to see Robert Randolph at Fog Street Lawn Club, August 15th. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingham, 1025, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingham here with you. Talking A.J. Brown's comments about outgrowing the situation in Tennessee and whether that speaks to a larger issue about our fair city when it comes to sports or the Tennessee Titans organization. You let us know. 615-737-1025. Let's go to Dylan in Nashville on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dylan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking the call. I really just wanted to, you know, A.J. Brown back in 2023, he actually mentioned that he would have stayed in Tennessee for $22 million. So realistically, I'm with Paul Kaharsky here. I think if you had just shown him the money, he would have never gone to Philadelphia, never had the experience of that bigger market. And Nashville, especially with the new way that they're headed with the stadium, the way the city's going in general, I think he would have been a key marketable piece for the Tennessee Titans organization. And that's a huge miss for the Titans. They have not had a wide receiver since Derek Mason. So I'm glad that you're on the show taking this call, man, because get some good insight on it. But I appreciate you guys taking the call. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thanks, okay. Dylan.
Thank you, Dylan. Was the stadium already set in place had they already decided that they were building a stadium?
Timeline.
I think they did at that point. they had already decided, they hadn't had all the particulars, but the stadium was going to be built. Am I right with that timeline?
It was in April of 2023 when the Metro Nashville City Council approved the money to build the stadium.
Okay, so it was in the works, it but was not in the finalized. Works.
Yeah, not finalized, in the works. So, I mean, whether it's hard for me to say, because when you I've been in that situation, and I've seen guys in that situation where, you know, the team that drafted them, you want to do whatever you can to try to make a deal work out. And if it don't, then obviously you got to move on. So I'm not saying that he didn't want, like, if the Titans, and that was the thing. I wonder, had the Titans put a contract on the table and said, and Philly had their contract before the trade, I wonder if AJ would have just said, and his camp would have said, we want to sign this deal. If that deal was, because we don't know if the deal was in place or not, the $22 million or $20 million in place. We only know what, you know, Philly ended up giving him after the trade. But if there was a contract, like, ready to sign, would he have signed it? Because he still didn't have to sign the contract just because they put it on the table, because he still had another year left on his deal. So he could have been, there could have been a contract. He probably was like, no, I don't, that's not enough. So there's something that needs to be done, either a trade or I may hold out.
It's too bad that John Robinson was hamstrung with his situation, that he couldn't go through some more detail on that. I think we all would love to have known.
If there was a deal on a table.
Yeah, and I'm sure they had offered something, right? Because obviously, as has been pointed out, the market for wide receivers was just about to change. It was starting to change. And so I think John Robinson had a budget for what he thought it was going to take, and then he realized this is going to take a lot more, and I'm not willing to go there. I've seen, remember him being on the record saying that he had a value in mind for what A.J. Brown brought based on the old system. A.J. Brown and Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel were saying, no, we're going to change the thinking of what a premier wide receiver is worth in today's NFL. And they won that. It's probably helped Jefferson and Chase and all the guys that have signed the mega deal since then.
One texter says, I'm 25 years old and a lifelong Titans fan, and from what I can remember, it's always been like this lack of coverage in the sports media. No one ever talking about us. I mean, we get the number one pick, and it's the least amount of coverage over the first number one overall pick ever. And it's not even close, to be honest. I don't know if there is any crazy conspiracy theory going on about us or what. And it's crazy because when Nashville hosted the draft, it went amazing for the NFL. Such a great turnout. So clearly Nashville can be an amazing sports town. The texter brings up a good point about Cam Ward. Cam Ward absolutely was the least covered number one overall draft pick in, I don't want to say in history, but certainly in recent history. And it makes you wonder if the Dallas Cowboys had the number one overall pick. Say what you will about Cam Ward and the reports of him coming out of college and whether he was truly a number one overall pick quarterback. You know that if Cam Ward had been drafted number one overall by the Dallas Cowboys, people would be talking about Cam Ward. I mean, that's just the nature of being in Nashville.
I think someday when they play back that tape on ESPN of the first 5 minutes after Cam Ward was picked, people are going to be going, what was going on? You know, that maybe. I mean, maybe Shedeur Sanders will become a story. He gets the start for the in the first game. But that was really, they shortchanged Cam Ward for sure.
Yeah, but was that more about the market that he was being drafted into, or the circumstance in the draft? You know, because you had, I mean, this was probably, I'm thinking about previous drafts. We haven't had what happened this draft ever happen, I don't think. When a guy, like, everybody is predicting him to be at least a first rounder.
With Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah, with Shedeur Sanders. I'm not even saying a top 10 pick. But everybody, he's a first rounder. And then when it doesn't happen and he slips further and further down, then it takes the attention off the number one pick. And it puts it solely on this, you know, one individual that's been polarizing throughout this whole process. So I think part of it probably was the market that you're in, but it doesn't help when someone else is more polarizing than the number one pick, and that was Shedeur Sanders.
One texter says, AJ wanted to be in Philly before the trade. He was working out with Hurts in the offseason. He seems like a player that only plays hard when everything is going right. Casey in Gallatin says, guys, I remember the situation fairly well, and I think it was clear that he did not want to be here. I don't believe even if the Titans would have given him a few million dollars a year more than Philly.
I think that leads to what Paul said about the disrespect thing. Is it disrespect because they didn't want to give you the money up front, or did they say something within the meetings that put you and your camp off? What was it? Because, you know, these are things that you hopefully are not affecting the GM and everyone else that has to sign these contracts now. Are the same things that affected probably AJ, will it affect potential guys that are going to re-up on their deal, rookie guys that earn that second contract?
Well, to the call, to the texter's point, there's no question that it had to be a discussion internally. The volatility of AJ Brown's personality, right? He clearly, and he was, I think, trying to be volatile. He was pushing the envelope with the baseball swings in the cage and the training elsewhere, right? He was doing that, and so there was a little bit, I'm sure, of, is this the guy we want to invest big money, big-time wide receiver money to? But sometimes that's what you get. When a great wide receiver, his greatest strengths, his belief in himself, the ability he has, is coupled with a weakness, because he does even now, like he does have spats, you know, or times where there's a little blip, and everybody in Philadelphia is going, "Wait, what's wrong with AJ Brown?" Remember, he was calling a talk show. Remember they had the, we'll forget about it now, but remember the tank 2 years ago. Like, they're the defending champions now, but remember they were 10-1, and then they hit the skids. It was a really bizarre collapse, and it got volatile with AJ Brown at that point.
Casey in Gallatin follows up, says, my theory, and we touched on this earlier, is that since the team was centered around Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown was not going to be the star player here, and that's what he coveted.
I think it's true. I think there's truth to that. Again, people say, well, he's playing with Saquon Barkley. No, yeah, he is, but Saquon came after. You know, A.J. Brown came into a situation where Derrick Henry was there already. This team was being built around Derrick Henry. He goes to Philly. Philly purposely go out and get him, and they build the passing game and majority of the offense around his ability to make plays. And then just so happened, the next following year, they get, was it a year or 2 years? It was 2 years later, they get Saquon Barkley, and they win a Super Bowl. So I think he understood his time here, albeit it was really good but short. He knew that where he wanted to be in his career, he wasn't more than likely, he probably wasn't going to be able to attain those things. And maybe the Super Bowl was a part of it, but I'm sure the individual accolades and the money, he felt that he wasn't going to get here, so he had to go somewhere else. And essentially, you forced your way out of a situation you wanted to get out of. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you felt you needed more money and you wanted to be in another market, if they're willing to trade you, so be it.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on this. We will get back into the current Tennessee Titans coming up next. There is a position that I want to discuss. It happens to be the one that Derek Mason played for a long time at a high level. We talked about it a little bit with Paul Kaharsky earlier in the hour. I want to dive into the wide receivers, specifically the younger wide receivers on the Tennessee Titans. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.